It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the next room. You know, it's relatively new. I've only had a couple shows before this one that we're going to do today. And just to kind of recap a little bit, I'm a big fan of death. I'm fascinated about it, the topic, ever since I was a little girl. My mother was an obit queen, and she kind of passed it on to me. And I love the history, you know, the history behind obituaries. I love cemeteries. I like funeral homes. I like songs about death and dying and what's next. And it's a complete fascination. So when the concept came to do this show, because, you know, my mother stepped into the next room 8 years ago, my dad just recently left after, as my girlfriend Nancy say, you know, she says about my dad, he stuck the landing. He was 91. He was in good health and just really had a beautiful, peaceful death. I started thinking about doing this show. And of course, as luck would have it, the good folks, my friend Brent at Empower said, Jane, I love it. Let's talk about death, dying, grieving, green funerals, wonderful ways to, you know, think about our loved ones. And so then, you know, pieces of puzzle started to fit. One thing led to another. And I hear about this fascinating woman. Her name is Laura Pritchett. She is a prolific writer. I mean, she has got so many awards. It's just insane. This woman has written so many fabulous books and won tons of awards. But this particular book caught my eye, and it's called Making Friends with Death. So I'd like to introduce my guest, and we're going to get right to it because this book is a book that everyone should have and use. It's a workbook. So welcome to the show, Laura. I am so thrilled to meet you.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here to talk about death.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you're kind of like my death soul sister. I started reading Making Friends with Death, and I'm giggling. I mean, you sent the digital copy to me a few days ago, and I was reading it on my computer, and I'm like, oh, well, this just requires a laptop and a couch. So last night I sat there, and I was reading and reading and reading, and I got all the way to page 90, and it's like it's over 280 some pages in the book, and I'm thrilled because every so often, you it's a workbook and you ask questions, and I started filling in my answers, and I'm like, this is brilliant. Everyone needs to have a copy of this book. Everyone that's even thought or had a fleeting dream or you're afraid or whatever, we need to make friends with death. And I love that you took this and went further. So tell me a little bit about, I mean, I read it, but your story about being a child and how you were raised and how you became fascinated with this topic.
Yeah, it sounds like we have a lot in common, our childhood fascination with death. But I do love cemeteries and funerals and thinking about best things. But the best things regarding death. But it did. It started early for me. And it partly started because I grew up on a ranch in Colorado, and ranch life is full of birth and death. It's a wonderful way to grow up, actually. You're just very present to the whole life cycle. But one thing that was unique about my family ranch was that it bordered a very old historic cemetery. And at one point, a skeleton was falling into a ditch because there was a flood. And so my mom did the right thing, which was to dig the casket up, the old box. This man was buried in the 1890s, and she dug him up and was trying to move him across, you know, where he'd be safe, rebury him. But for a while, she's an unusual woman, very interesting. She got his skull and plonked it in the kitchen with us. And this strange skeleton of a man with long red hair sat on the kitchen table for quite a few weeks.
That's crazy.
She was a biologist and a rancher, though, so this didn't freak her out. And I think it made me very comfortable with the idea that I, too, would one day be, you know, in that state in somehow. And it made me both terrified and started a journey to get comfortable with death.
Right. And so throughout making friends with death, like you have different, for instance, the ones is that you should practice your death, which I have never heard that concept. And, you know, you wrote about, you said that some people think if you, whatever you focus on expands and, oh, I can't think about death because then I'm going to die tomorrow. And you just say, what a misnomer that is. So let's talk about the art of practicing your death.
Yeah, I want to mention the subtitle of my book. It's called A Field Guide for Your Impending Last Breath, to be read ideally before it's imminent, which is supposed to indicate the fact that there are practical hands-on activities for anyone who is helping someone else die or afraid of their own death. And one of the things is to practice your own death. And in some cultures, people actually climb into an empty casket or a similar situation in order to meditate on death and to get comfortable with us with it. I don't believe that if you think about something, it's drawn to you, except in the sense of if we think about being comfortable with death and practice it, that can be drawn to us.
Right.
And we can therefore die with our chin up and our heart brave and feeling okay about it. Ideally, I mean, that's what I think most of us would like if we had to identify what an ideal death looked like.
Right. So how does one practice death?
Well, I think you can do it literally in lay down in a meditative pose. And many traditions have an example of this where you just pretend you are breathing your last and see how you feel about that and sit with it. But there are other ways, I think, to practice your death, too. I'm really afraid of flying, but I fly all the time, of course. And so every time I get on an airplane, I spend just a few moments, and it's actually quite calming. I think, well, if I were about to die, how would I feel about that? And I start what I call my death mantra, which is my recitation of everything I hold beautiful and true, everything I'm proud of, everything I've loved about life. And in a way, I feel like that helps me practice death and just calms me down enough to get on the airplane and sit down and chill out.
Okay, so that's another cool thing that, you know, you have this, like, I never thought about having a death mantra before. So I wrote mine out last night because I'm going through your workbook, and it's a really cool idea, and it helps you. There's what I kept finding is there was so much clarity around a topic that many people fear and are uncomfortable speaking about. However, it is a destination every single soul on the planet is going to have to experience. So it's so interesting to me that we are not in our culture anyway. I think other cultures are super accepting and actually embrace death a lot more than we do. I wonder why that is. Do you have any idea why? Because you've got statistics. Why is it that Americans are so flippin' uncomfortable with the concept of moving on to the next room?
That's such a good question. I think humans in general are pretty good at denial. And it's easy to deny what we most fear or most dislike. But we can't live in a state of denial. That's not healthy. And I think our culture, unfortunately, asks us all the time in various insidious ways to deny aging and death. I mean, think of all the money and time people spend trying not to age or look like they've aged.
Right.
Think of how much money is spent medicalizing death. It's taken two hospitals. People are hooked up to tubes. Everything's very white and sanitized. People don't want to see that it can be messy and human and complicated. And so we have all these things in place that keep us in denial. And I feel sorry for us. I mean, I think it's something we can work on. That's the beauty of this show. The more we talk about it, the healthier we will be, because I just believe what doesn't get talked about doesn't get fixed. And we can fix this denial. We can embrace death.
I love that. What doesn't get talked about doesn't get fixed. So amazing. If you just tuned in, my guest today is Laura Pritchett, and she is Making Friends with Death. It's a field guide for your impending last breath to be read ideally before it's imminent. And I'm telling you, this is, I mean, I got such a kick out of it, and I haven't finished it. I'll be on the couch finishing it tonight. It's an easy read, and then it brings you up to a question, something you need to face. Like, for instance, you need a team of people that you can trust, that really, really, really have your back, that you can talk to about your wishes, about what you would like, so that in the unlikely event you go before these other friends, that they will follow through for you, have the right music playing, have your wishes, you know, and it's just, I think that's such a cool concept. So like, I made my list. I thought, well, I got to get a hold of these people and get them in a death agreement wish list or whatever that section was. I can't remember. Do you remember what that's called? When you gather your friends?
Well, there's several sections that comment on that. But yeah, listing your friends who will go the distance with you and then actually going the next important step, which is writing out your wishes and giving it to them.
Right. I love that. Write down your wishes. That's really, really key. And, you know, we have I guess we're in a smaller percent. I didn't realize that most people don't have a trust or a will in all of that. And so by doing that, that made my husband and I really look deeper to where, like, I'm writing love letters to my children and, you know, getting together all my passwords in one handy dandy little area and writing out in my own hand what goes to, you know, what possession goes to which child. To me, I think it's really cool because I don't want my kids going through my closet or going through my armoire or the garage and going, oh my God, mother was, what was she thinking? You know, I want to make it all nice and clean and have them be almost like surprised, like Christmas morning, like, wow, this is cool. Look at this. She wrote another letter. Oh my God. So to me, it's always been supernatural to do all of this, but to have your workbook, you're giving me even further inspiration and more ideas that I hadn't thought about. Okay, so here's one I had never heard about that I love. What the heck is a death cafe?
Oh, gosh, those are so fun. I've hosted several. It's a big party. You can host them at your house. You can host them at a cafe. They're quite common in other cultures, but people get together to just talk about death in a non-judgmental way. You let people say whatever they want to say. Some people might want to talk about they're not afraid of death, but they're afraid of the pain that might precede death. And some people want to talk about what they believe happens after death. And you just provide an opening. You provide a community. It could be for friends. It could be for strangers. I've had a few and I always get a big cake and I have the baker put death, the final frontier.
Yes.
Exclamation mark. That's and we throw a party. We have wine. We talk.
Everyone's
so relieved.
That's so cool. I mean, I absolutely love that idea. Like I instantly thought I need to gather some people for a death cafe night. And, you know, I just think it's such an awesome idea because then you're taking away all the, you know, the stigma and you're just, you know, peeling off the Band-Aid and saying, hey, kids, let's talk about this. Regardless of how old you are, one day you're going to stop breathing. My dad always had a cool thing that he would say when he never cared. My mother cared about every time someone passed, like she wanted to know why, like it really ticked her off if they didn't put why the person died in the obituary. It was one of her pet peeves. And I just thought, I love that. I'm like that too. I'll actually research and try to find out what happened to the person if they don't tell you. My dad, on the other hand, could care less. So when someone would die, he lived to the ripe old age of 91, right up until a few weeks before he left, another old buddy of his passed. And I said, Dad, you know, what happened to Bob? And he goes, shortness of breath. And that was his standard reply every time someone died. And he was like, you know, that was it. So other than death cafes, you had another section in the book that I loved that I hadn't thought about. And that was make a shrine. What does that look like to you?
I just want to first say how much I love your dad's answer. I think sometimes we always want to know why, because then we can try to avoid that. Mm. For example, she died in a car crash. Oh, I'm going to stay at home today. But really, it doesn't help us live life. We're all going to, for some reason, we're all going to find the end of this particular passage. And I love your dad's response. I just wanted to say that.
Right on. But thank you. Because he was, you know what? He was such a character. And would I just have to touch on this just for a minute, because in the book as well, you were talking about not many of us really know of someone that has had a graceful exit. It's usually people are hooked up to machines, or there's tragedy involved, or cancer, or things that are not very pretty. Death doesn't have a tendency to look all that, you know, beautiful and graceful. My dad, however, really, he did it so beautifully. And I think because he was so comfortable and he was so ready to move beyond. And he talked about it all the time. He would say, when I check out, it was sort of like, you know, waiter, can I have my tab, please? He would always refer to it as, well, when I check out. And he was so comfortable with it. And it was great because, you know, being his daughter and having that extra 8 years with him after mom left, he grew as a person. And he sat there for, you know, I don't know. He was all alone, but he was in his chair and he was watching TV, probably his favorite show, Fox News, and he just gently left. He exited. He went on his terms. All of my sisters wanted him to go to the hospital the day before. I called him and I said, how do you feel about that? And he was like, you know what? I do not want to go to the hospital. And I said, well, you're a wise man. You've always made good choices. I'm in your corner. If you don't want to go to the hospital, don't go. I trust you to do what's right for you. And you know that he died in the middle of the night that very next day. He did not want to go to the hospital because he knew what were they going to do, Laura? They were going to start hooking him up to machines and giving him oxygen and poking him with needles. Next thing you know, he's still here, miserable and ready to haunt somebody upon his departure. So thank
that
you
gives
for
me
saying
shivers. Shivers of joy.
I'm not kidding. You know, when they came, the people came, like, because his neighbor found him, but he was sitting in his chair. He didn't. That's how peaceful it was, like a little pinch and away he went. So thank you for saying that. So, okay. Let me circle back.
I wish we heard more stories like that. That makes me so happy. I think I do advocate in the book that look to people to guide you and then try to set your own example. I mean, he set a beautiful example for you and your siblings, and what a gift, what a gift.
Yeah, really did. And when Nancy said Big Don stuck the landing, I laughed so freaking hard. And you know, when people say to me, oh, Jane, I'm so sorry. I'm like, what are you sorry about? He was a World War II vet. He was a great provider. He was married to his girlfriend for 62 years. He had beautiful things. They went, they traveled. He laughed. He was the jokester. I celebrated his 91 birthday with him. And when they brought him his key lime pie with a candle in it, do you know that he said, and many more? And I have it on video. And he died like 6 weeks later. So,
oh, wow.
There is no pain there. That's a life well lived. So if we could all get there. So let's talk about, gosh, we've got like 10 minutes left. This is going so fast. Let's talk about the shrine. And I want to touch on threshold singers and anything else that you're compelled to share with me, because your workbook, Making Friends with Death, I'm going to tell everyone, has to go get this. You need to face what it is. And she will do it in a good sense of humor. She walks you through it and then leaves you with this thoughtful process. It's really, really, really a great book. I cannot say enough. I'm going to be posting it everywhere because I want people to go get this and start dealing with the beautiful part of life, which is our transition to death. So Making a Shrine, what about that?
Well, thank you for your words. I am so honored and delighted you love it, because it has brought me so much peace. And a shrine is one example of that. I feel like humans really need tangible items. And we also love ceremony. And these can really make the difference between an anxious situation and a beautiful one. So I encourage people, for example, to make a shrine for a loved one in their hospital room or hospice room or in their home, wherever they happen to be. And items that matter, items that, you know, during those last bits of vision and last bits of smelling that you get to see and smell and look at, you know, touch, maybe all the items that have brought you joy. Mm-hmm. And related to that is the threshold singers. There's a whole chapter in my book on music, the importance of music. And I have one friend who says, I want silence around me when I die. I want to be meditating in silence. I get that. But many people would love important songs or meaningful tunes. And I interviewed one group of people called threshold singers. And they come in, they free of charge. They come into a hospice room or a hospital room at the family's request or at the dying person's request, and they sing a few a cappella songs and they leave. And it's just a beautiful way to experience music at a poignant time.
Well, yeah, you had mentioned too, in Making Friends with Death, that one of our last senses to shut down is our hearing. So, you know, even though, like, I know my sister had a really painful exit due to cancer, and she was in hospice, and I took in a playlist that I had made just for her with beautiful songs like How Great Thou Art and beautiful, biblical, gorgeous church songs that I know that she loved. And I would just play them for her over and over and over. And I felt that I knew she was more peaceful when the music was playing. I don't know. I love music. And you do have, like, I had to, you know, forge ahead because I hadn't finished reading it by the time this interview was going to happen. So I skipped ahead because you've got an incredible list of songs to comfort. You have death songs. You've got some funny songs about death and passing at the end of the book, which is really, really cool. And I'm like, oh, wow, this will add to my playlist, because I've got a playlist called The Next Room that I started. Well, I started to comfort myself by, when my mom passed, I made a playlist. When my sister Lynn passed, I made a playlist. When my dad passed, I made In the Next Room. And I actually made my dad three different playlists, because I was doing the music at his, you know, when people come into the church and at the funeral home, I wanted his music playing, which was Dixieland and big band. And, you know, he just loved all of that stuff. Like, just all the good old classic, beautiful stuff that he loved so much. So I love that you have
a daughter. Music is so subjective. So my list, of course, just contains things that I think people would enjoy, but everyone's got to make their own playlist. And what a fun activity. What a good thing to do.
It really is. It helps you kind of, for me, it was really a calming thing. It was like the only thing I could think of that would help me in my grieving process, that kept me active. And also you can sob while you're doing it, and you can edit, and you can go, oh, that's perfect. And then find other things and Google, you know, songs. And so it really is it's a very therapeutic way to go through a death.
And
it's my go-to, probably because I've been in radio and the music business for so long that it's ingrained. But what are some of the other things? You know, you've got all these great lists. It's Making Friends with Death. It's a field guide for your impending last breath, to be read ideally before it's imminent. What else can we find in this wonderful workbook?
One thing I think you can find, perhaps the most important takeaway message, is that this is not a morbid book, nor is it morbid to think about death. Thinking about death actually helps you use death and our mortality as your advisor to live a beautiful and full life with priority and meaning, and, you know, be very mindful about your days and grateful for your days. So I just want to say that I think thinking about death actually helps you live. And I hope that's one of the messages of the book.
I love that. And you know what? It should, because, you know, every day you wake up and you go, you open your eyes and you're like, my first thought is thank you. And then I'm like, okay, let's get this party started, because you don't know. None of us know. I mean, if you're in good health, like you said, oh, you actually had a section of the book, like, pick what age that you see yourself going, you know? And so, boom, 88 for me. Eights are my number. I like 88. I won't be too big of a pain in the butt to my kids at 88. I'll still be cute and wrinkled, but yet I'll be ready. You know, it's kind of split the difference between my mom at 83 and my dad at 91. I'm there. And I like, too, that you had draw what your face will look like. Like, that's crazy. I love that.
Thank you. I think there's lots of fun activities. I get a kick out of doing them all.
There really is. Well, where would you like to send people? Do you want them to go to laurapritchett.com? Is that the best place for them, or, you know, to find this book? I mean, I'll post a link too so that people can actually buy it. And then I'm sure you have Facebook, and I bet you do Twitter and all of that good stuff. So
I do. And there's also a website, makingfriendswithdeath.com, that might be helpful.
Beautiful. Okay, good. And on there, are there activities on there, or is it just a chance to connect with you?
I think it's a chance mostly to see what the book is about. So
okay. Awesome.
That's a good place to start.
All right. Awesome. I am such a fan, and I am so grateful that you took this time out of your day, and now you can go snowshoeing and go have fun with your family. We will have you. I would love to have you back on the show, because I just have such a good feeling about what we're doing here. And I just really like it. It's really fun to find another kindred spirit that wants to talk about death.
Yes. Thank you for finding me. I do think we're soul sisters.
I do
look forward
too.
To talk more.
I love that. We'll definitely talk some more. So thank you so much for coming on The Next Room. Laura Pritchett is my guest today, Making Friends with Death. It's a field guide for your impending last breath. So hit her up at makingfriendswithdeath.com, or you can look. She's got another, I mean, she's written so many books. So just go check her out, because authors need to be supported, and good writers. And she is a great writer. She uses humor and honesty, and it's just, I was giggling, and here I'm giggling over death. Isn't that how it should be? I think so. So thanks for joining me this week on The Next Room. I will be back next week with another wonderful show about death, dying, grieving, you name it. We're going to talk about it. If you know of anyone that would be a good fit for this show, send them my way. I'm wide open, and I need to have someone fun to talk to every single week about death. Once again, thank you so much to Laura, my guest on the show today.
Thank you.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.